really going to talk about.
Good morning, everyone. We're going to go ahead and open up the Senate Committee on Judiciary. Today we have a number of bills that we're doing for public hearing. First, let me just ask, Council, did we have anything for possible measure and introduction today?
Chair, members of the committee, no.
I didn't see anything.
Somebody's slipping somewhere.
Whoa. It's slowing down. All right. So what we're going to do first is we have Representative Tomei here. And Carolyn, if you want to come up, what I'm going to do is open a public hearing on all of the bills we have, because I understand you wanted to give testimony on each part of those. So at this point, I'm opening up a public hearing on Senate Bill 425, 426, 427, 429, and 430. And what we're going to do is we'll take Representative Tomei's testimony, see if there's any questions for her so she can get back to her other duties in the Capitol. Then we'll start back, and I assume we'll start at the top of the list and work down based on our witnesses' registration sheets. So, Representative?
Thank you, Chair Prezonsky, and thank you, Committee. Thank you for allowing me to testify this morning about several bills in which I've been working for some months, along with many other people. It's been a real pleasure working on this bill. It's not a pleasure hearing about the abuse that you were going to be hearing about today. But it's a very invested group of people who are, several groups of people who are working on this. This is a very important issue to me. As some of you know, I'm a social worker and I've worked with many of the children that we're going to be talking about today. This is important to my constituents, to residents in my in this state. Oregon has become a hub for sex trafficking of children. And I want to thank the City of Portland. We have a representative here, a city commissioner, Multnomah County officials who are here, who are stepping up to help these young victims. Senator Wyden has been a strong voice in advocating for federal funds for shelters for these children. And here in Salem, we have a group of stakeholders who have developed a package of legislation that's here before you today. There are several goals in this packet of legislation. We want to give law enforcement better tools to prosecute the traffickers. We want to send a strong message to those who patronize prostitutes that children are off limits. We want to educate law enforcement officers to recognize that these young prostitutes are victims, not criminals. And most importantly, we want to develop the resources needed to help these young victims with safety, shelter, and most important, treatment. Here are some brief comments about several of these bills. Senate Bill 425 deals with compelling prostitution. Currently, to convict traffickers under this statute, prosecutors must establish that the trafficker knew that the victim was under the age of 18. Senate Bill 425 establishes strict liability. If you are trafficking a girl who is under 18, ignorance of age is no defense. That is very important because that has been used as a defense in the past. People will say this girl looks like she's over 18. 426 is a funding vehicle, and I know this is going to be difficult. It directs money to law enforcement for education and training in dealing with these youths, and also directs funding to the Department of Human Services to develop the specialized shelter and treatment necessary to care for prostitution victims. You'll notice there are big blanks in the bill. It's my hope that the Department of Human Services representatives are here today with some estimates on the appropriate amounts that should be. 427 increases the penalties for those who buy sex from children. And I want to especially draw your attention to the staggering increase in the fines for these people who buy children to have sex with. Studies show that those who patronize prostitutes, these young prostitutes, and I want to remind you, the median age of kids coming into prostitution is 12 years old. You'll be hearing more about that. That's the median age of young kids getting into prostitution. So if we're talking about a draconian offense, prostituting children, to me, is that offense. Studies show that those who patronize prostitutes are usually these young prostitutes, children prostitutes, are usually married, better educated, and financially better well off than many other types of offenders. So I am proposing a whopping fine of $20,000. We want to get their attention. This is not your everyday. Sometimes prostitution is known as an offense that is not hurting anyone. Anybody who can say that having sex with a 12 or 14-year-old child is not hurting that child is not paying attention. You have not read the Willamette Week lately when you know of a child who is starting to have sex with an adult at age 13 or 14. I also propose posting their pictures on the internet. And again, this may seem draconian. This may seem that you're also offending. You're showing up this person's face, and their family is going to be affected.
That's a commercial break.
I appreciate that. Thank you, Senator Cruz.
My apologies.
That, no problem.
We haven't figured out what we're going to do for that. I better turn mine off, too.
Thank you for the warning.
Thank you.
I know families will be affected by having their father or their spouse or their uncle or their brother's picture on the internet. I want you to think how the family of these girls, usually girls, sometimes boys, are also affected, how that child is affected for the rest of her life, and how the parents, the families of these child victims are affected. We need to reduce the demand for underage girls and boys. These men need the threat to be publicly exposed. So this can't be just something that's going to be dealt with in judges' chambers, even with the fine. The public may never know this. These need, I think, the threat of being publicly exposed as a child abuser. Now, one of the issues we talked about, we've been meeting about these issues for months. One of the things we talked about is putting these people on the sexual abuse registry. We decided that that was not something we wanted to do because that affected their ability to get a job and also to get housing. We think the fine and the threat of having their picture on the internet should be enough of a threat that they will think twice or three times or four times before they go into an agreement to have sex with an underage child. Moreover, the bill also contains the ignorance of age is no defense clause. So we're saying buyer beware. Senate Bill 428 allows law enforcement officers to detain young prostitutes for up to 3 days while appropriate placements can be found. Again, in meeting with law enforcement and with DAs and with people who work with children, we know that very often when these kids are picked up and they go into a foster home, they go in the front door, and that day or the next day, they will go out the back door because they don't see themselves as victims. They see themselves as maybe being in love with their pimp. Somehow this keeps them independent, and they can buy their own clothes and their own jewelry. So they don't see themselves as victims right off. And sometimes when they leave that foster home, they will take other children with them. So we feel like it's necessary, and we've heard this from law enforcement and from DAs, that it's important that we're able to detain these children for up to 3 days. They need shelter and treatment, and these children don't stay in foster care. And this measure gives the time needed to find appropriate placement and assemble the resources needed to help these children. Sex trafficking of children is a serious problem here in Oregon. Washington has taken steps to combat it. California's laws are stricter than ours, and we need to protect our children by passing these important measures. I'm happy to answer questions, but I suspect that there are going to be people in the audience who can answer these questions better than I. But any easy questions I can
answer? Well, I can't guarantee they'll be easy, but let's see if there are any. Any questions or comments? I guess there's none.
Thank you.
Representative Tomei, what I'd like to bring out when you mentioned Senate Bill 427 and the posting,
First off, the $20,000 fine, the court can reduce if the person's unable to pay.
That's right.
Correct. And secondly, the posting only takes place if the court finds the person willfully failed to pay the fine. Is that correct?
I think originally that's what the bill said, and I will double check that, but that was not my intent.
Okay.
That was not my intent. Is that how you read the bill now?
That's what the bill
right.
says, Mr. Chairman.
Right. Okay. That's
if the court determines after hearing that a person convicted of violating subsection of the section has willfully failed the fine described in this section, and the person has willfully failed to complete, the court shall cause the following information to be published.
Well, like I said, there's a couple things. First, we're going to deal with these. What we're going to do today, is, as I said, this is a public hearing on
right.
all these bills. Once we have the public hearings, we're going to kind of circle back and see. I've had some comments, and I like on that statement there, I'm not sure how we can have the court compel a publication to occur unless we're going to set up some system within the court that you're going to have monitored for this type of putting it onto the Internet. So, I mean, there's some questions that we'll need to look at, so let's flag these and we'll work
right.
with Representative Tomei based on what our intent and what we think the committee is willing to move forward.
Thank you, Chair Pruzanski. I thought that we had developed an amendment that clarified that more clearly, and I think we specified that it would be the state police. Is that in the current bill, that the state police would be the ones to take the picture and post it on the Internet?
Chair members of the committee, Representative May, we did get an amendment
okay.
along those lines. And
okay.
In fact, I'm probably going to get one or two more amendments
right.
as
I'm
it
sure.
relates to this
right.
section.
I know this is a difficult issue.
And the other thing I'm going to put on the record now, because I want to make, I know the work group's been working very hard on this as to the amount of the fine starting at $20,000.
Right.
My concern, I just want to make certain that that would not be viewed by the courts as something that would be excessive for, you know, first-time offense. And so we're going to get a little bit more work done with legislative counsel, so when we send something out, we know we've got something that's going to be constitutional and not be subject to challenge.
Right.
And Mr. Chair, if I could just make a brief comment, because I spoke with Rep. Tomei about this yesterday. I know we've had a lot of discussions in this committee and in criminal justice forums and that sort of thing about evidence-based practices, and I would like to get some more information, and there may be people here today who can get information about whether that public display or posting a picture actually deters. It assumes that the person who's thinking about committing a crime actually knows of the possible penalty and believes that he will get caught. So I would like to look at some of the practices in criminal justice to find out if that actually deters, because I am concerned about the effect on the innocent children, and I think we may be able to come up with alternatives working with these bills to perhaps get some sort of deterrence that will work without having an effect on the family of the defendant. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you
very much. Thank you, committee. Thank you, Chair.
All right. So we're going to go ahead and now, close the public hearing for all of the bills that are there in the sense of, recess them all. I'm going to recess all of the public hearings. So I'm now going to reopen Senate Bill 425 for public hearing. And Commissioner Saltzman, I believe, Dan, why don't you come on up? Did you have anyone else that you'd like to have come up with you? I know your schedule's tight, and I wanted to get you up. I'm going to get two more, but if you had anyone else that's joining you?
I don't have anybody else joining.
Okay, then pick one of the NC.
I represent from Multnomah County Commissioner Diane McKeel's office.
Okay, why don't you go ahead and have her come up? And sir, are you listed on here?
Yes, Andrew, the bottom line.
Okay. And then why don't we bring up, looking at who I've got here, Barbara Ross. Barbara, former colleague, why don't you come up? So this will be our first panel. The way we're going to do this, and I guess, Commissioner, do you have enough time to have everyone give their testimony?
Oh,
then
sure.
We'll take questions after that.
Sure, absolutely.
Okay, why don't you get started?
Well, thank you, and good morning, Chair Pruzanski and members of the committee. It's an honor to testify before you today. For the record, my name is Dan Saltzman, Portland City Commissioner. As both a city commissioner and a former Multnomah County Commissioner, I've spent years in public service, focusing on issues that are important to our community and affect our community's most vulnerable populations, victims of domestic violence, child abuse, and children in foster care. What's terrifying about sex trafficking is that it really touches on all of these issues. While a lot of work has been happening in Multnomah County and in the city of Portland, child sex trafficking is an issue throughout the state of Oregon. The Multnomah County Child Abuse Hotline, which is the only child abuse hotline that operates 24/7 in the state, receives calls regarding victims of sex trafficking from Klamath County, Morrow County, Umatilla County, Linn County, Marion County, Tillamook County, Linn County, Jackson, and Yamhill counties are all counties that are calling with this problem in their community. So communities across the state are having conversations and starting to recognize that these children victims need help, and your hearing today is part of that, recognizing that. And before you today are a set of bills that are all intended to regard these children as victims of sexual exploitation and to toughen penalties and strengthen prosecution for those who exploit victims. I wanted to specifically highlight Senate Bill 425, which eliminates a commonly used defense for Johns that they didn't know a child was under 18. This bill removed that defense for Johns who buy sex from minors. Additionally, the bill includes language to beef up the current statute on compelling prostitution. For too long, pimps have used the legal language to say that they did not induce or cause a girl into trafficking. They were merely helping her post an ad online or giving her a ride. The additional language would include the words aids or facilitates, so that if a pimp's actions in any way aids or facilitates a child into exploitation, he could be held guilty for compelling prostitution. So I appreciate your support of this bill and look forward to giving, I would appreciate your support and look forward to giving prosecutors the tools they need to crack down on Johns and pimps. So we need to send a strong message that exploitation of children is not acceptable in Oregon, and that starts today with your actions. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Andrew?
My name is Andrew Olson. I'm a policy analyst for Multnomah County Commissioner Diane McKeel. I'd like to start by sending apologies on behalf of Commissioner McKeel. She's in Washington, D.C. She just became a grandmother last week. Otherwise, she would be here speaking for herself. I won't repeat a lot of what's about to be said, but I will give you a little background on what we're doing in Multnomah County. Little over a year ago, we got a federal grant, the commercial sexual exploitation of children. So we have a lady working for our Department of Community Justice named Jocelyn Baker. She's administering that grant. Basically what she's working on is coordinating efforts among law enforcement, service providers, county, city folks, everyone that's involved in this issue, and making sure that we're all doing it in a universally organized and efficient manner and not duplicating efforts. We also just last month had our first meeting of the Sex Buyer Accountability and Diversion Program. What that is in Multnomah County, a man is caught in a sting by the Portland Police Bureau attempting to buy sex from a Portland police officer who is undercover. He can opt to go to this program. It's $1,000 charge to go to this diversion program. It's a one-day class. Starts at 9 a.m. on a Saturday with a graphic slideshow of the possible STDs and health risks that face them. There's law enforcement that present. There's a victim that talks to them. There's community members. They get a full look at what the impacts of their actions are. It's based on a model out of San Francisco that has also been used in Seattle. So we're happy to do that. It pays for itself, as well as there's little money to law enforcement and the providers there, too. So we're excited to have that have just started. So I'll leave it at that. I want to thank the committee for taking up this issue, and we urge your support on this bill as well as the others. Thank you.
Thank you, Barbara.
And
thank you for letting me testify, and I really want to congratulate the committee on taking up this very serious issue. I'm from Corvallis, and
Barbara, I need you to put your name on the record.
Okay, I'm Barbara Ross, former legislator, former county commissioner, and now a citizen, mainly doing advocacy for homeless persons. And I want to thank you for taking up this very serious issue. I'm from Corvallis, and we don't have organized teenage prostitution in Corvallis. But a survey of our juvenile counselors indicated that they have quite a number of girls who run away to Portland because of being in bad home situations in Corvallis, and then they're very vulnerable to being taken advantage of in the city. I think that this is a statewide problem, that it's not just Corvallis that girls run away to the city and then become vulnerable to exploitation there. And so I think we need to think about this as something that all of Oregon needs to be concerned about. And closing this loophole of saying, well, I didn't know she was under 18, I think that's a very important issue to take up. I think that the other thing that's really important is when we're talking about these young girls is to think about the long-term damage. I'm currently working with homeless adults. Most of these are men, but there are a few women, and I'm currently very close to three women who are homeless who were sexually abused as young teenagers, and the damage is permanent. The damage does not go away. It's easy for those around this to rationalize and say, well, this is just a temporary thing. The girl consented. It was what she wanted. But it is a long-term permanent damage, and these three women that I'm close to are having a very difficult time carrying on their lives because of the anger that is still with them because 20 years ago they were exploited as a young person. So I congratulate you on taking up this issue. I know there will be controversy about different parts of it, but you guys have lots of options and lots of alternatives, and I'm hoping you will produce a practical and workable result. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for anyone on the panel? Senator Cruz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for Commissioner Saltzman. In your testimony, and I'll use common vernacular, you made reference to both pimps and johns. The way I read the bill, this is dealing with pimps, not johns. Am I missing something here?
I believe it is. I believe you're correct. It is okay. Dealing with pimps. I was incorrect in referring to the age issue. It applies to pimps.
Okay, thank you.
All right, any other questions for anyone on the panel? Senator Dingfelder.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Hopefully you can hear. I just wanted to thank my commissioner and thank Commissioner McKeel for your leadership on this issue. As you know, my district is one of the areas that's sort of the hardest hit, since I have Northeast, Southeast, 82nd, in many areas where there are targeted areas where we've had lots of challenges. So just want to thank both of you, and please pass on to the commissioner that we're all in this together and looking forward to working with you to solve this problem.
Thank you.
All right, and I just have a couple of things.
Andrew, regarding the program that just started up in Portland, I'm assuming it's not just for males that have been accused, but also equal protection would open this up to a woman that also was charged with the same offense.
Someone else might be able to answer that better, but I do know that it's men who are caught attempting to buy from undercover Portland Police Bureau officer. So,
right. So if it's the reverse, I would just suggest that you make certain that you have equal protection, that or you're going to have someone challenging that males are getting something as a benefit as compared to a female that's in the same situation.
Sure.
All right. And then for former Representative Ross, also former Texan, it's nice to have someone at the table that doesn't have an accent. Thank you very much for being here.
I was going to say, Mr. Chair, is there ever a former Texan?
No. Thank you all very much for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, we have one other panel that's at least on the names I have on this list. And Carl, I'm not going to try to say your last name. It looks like it's Kritzberg, but I'm not able to read your writing quite there. Greg, and it's Mo something. Mark? All right, apologize. And Randy Ellison.
Heidi's husband.
Oh, okay.
Oh. The connection is here. Now we know. So, gentlemen, whoever wants to start off, and we're going to take all your testimony, and then we'll open up for questions after that.
Yeah.
All right.
Chair Brzezinski, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Carl Kreisberg, and I'm a student at West Salem High School, which is located at 1776 Titan Drive Northwest, and it's an honor to talk to you guys today. So, first off, I want to say that I support Senate Bill 425 because it is a positive step towards abolishing child prostitution in the state of Oregon. And I believe looking at this is a way from discouraging pimps in this industry. Currently, there are many incentives for them to participate in the industry, which, according to Doug Justice, who is a police officer up in Portland, Oregon, who deals with these men, he states that with just one girl, they can make $1,000 a day, 7 days a week for the period of a month. They're harder to arrest, as we've discussed already, and the sentences they receive are typically lighter. And so I believe that these such bills as Senate Bill 425 and 427 are necessary in order to counteract these incentives and make it so they're not willing to, or there's less incentive for them to join in the industry in the first place. And so as discussed before, the bill description as far as making any man who compels an underage prostitute will be charged with a Class B felony regardless of whether he was aware the prostitute was a minor or not. So I believe that such harsher legislation and giving the prosecution those advantages are necessary for discouraging pimps and this industry. And so I believe that with this discouraging of pimps, it'll help lead to the abolishment of child sex trafficking in the state of Oregon. And with the abolishment, this discouragement anyways will hopefully result in the safer returning of children who run away from home, the overall adult prostitution numbers to drop over time, and physical abuse charges against minors to drop throughout the state as well. And I believe in conclusion, if there's still any hesitation as to whether this bill should be passed, I think something we should ask ourselves is, if we had a child who was caught in this industry, would we have any hesitation in passing this bill? So, thank you very much. It was an honor speaking, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
All right, thank you. We might be getting back to you. Who wants to go next?
Chairman Brzezinski and distinguished committee members, my name is Randy Ellison, and I'm president of OASIS, the Oregon Abuse Advocates and Survivors in Service. I'm also a survivor of child sex abuse. I reside in Ashland, Oregon. I'm here to speak in support of all five of these bills dealing in sex trafficking. This is a term that up until a very short time ago we only heard described by UN officials referring to third world countries. Following an expose in the New York Times, it all of a sudden came very close to home. Portland, Oregon was the scene and was described as the city with the second largest population of sex slaves in the United States. These are not women brought in from third world countries. Sadly, they're under our underage children. Studies indicate that 90% of teenage prostitutes were sexually abused as children earlier in their life. They end up leaving home and becoming part of an invisible culture, one that most of us barely even know exists, but it does. The pain and the suffering that these children live with every minute, day and night, should move us to run for help or at least call 911 to get them to safety. Unfortunately, there is not a safe place for these kids. If they come to the attention of law enforcement, they are generally treated as criminals instead of the victims that they really are. This group of bills allow law enforcement to deal severely with people who pay money to have sex with children, and you cannot say you didn't realize how young they were. Senate bill, I realize this is just on 425, but one of them even sets up a grant that helps stop this type of activity by putting adequate police and investigators on the streets. It would also allow grants for treatment programs to help these victims heal. It is unfunded at this point, but passing it makes a statement that this is a priority, and as soon as we can find the money, we'll put it into action. It is indeed what we should expect of ourselves as a civilized society. In November, I was invited to Chicago to be part of 200 male survivors on the Oprah show. Like most Americans, I pictured myself sitting in that chair across from Oprah telling my story. I ended up sitting in row three, and like most of the people there, only spoke to those around me during the breaks. When I thought about it afterwards, I realized that I'd played a huge part. I was present to hold a place for those who were suffering and help create a safe place for a few to share their pain. By passing these bills, you will not be sitting in that chair across from Oprah. But you will be opening a door for children that have been put out in the cold and are being tortured on the streets in Oregon. I beg you to help stop this shameful for-profit business at the expense of our children's lives. Thank you.
Greg. Chair Prozanski and committee members, my name is Greg Mowat, and I am a deputy district attorney in Multnomah County, Oregon, have been for the last 16 years. I am also speaking in on behalf of the Oregon District Attorneys Association with regards to Senate Bill 425. I would like to speak to the two issues as presented here. One is the age as a defense, knowledge as to age as a defense, and the second, to echo Commissioner Saltzman's recommendation, as I understand, may be submitted as an amendment to add facilitation language to those that cause or induce, and I'd like to speak in support of both of those things. One of the things that I learned early on, I've been handling these cases for about the last 4 years, is that the youth that we are dealing with in terms of who have been trafficked have arrived damaged. These are youth that come from troubled homes, physical abuse, sexual abuse, neglect, and maltreatment. These are individuals that may not on any given occasion have a specific conversation with those that will in the future traffic them with regards to their age. There are certainly cases in which that is evident and easily provable. We have pimps that are picking up these young victims at school. We have pimps that are picking up these folks at the mall. And they may have specific knowledge as to the victim's age. The cases that become more difficult are those where the victim has lied to the offender about their age or there have not been a specific discussion. But there is a public policy behind holding those that traffic in those youth accountable anyway. The reason is the legislature and the people of Oregon have long recognized that the early entry into prostitution makes recovery and rehabilitation more difficult. And those that traffic in these youth should squarely bear the brunt of the burden rather than the youth that are trafficked. For that reason, I am in support of eliminating the ignorance as to age as a defense. With regards to the language of adding facilitation or aiding to those that induce or cause, let me explain a little bit about where we are with regards to inducing or causing at this point. The Oregon Court of Appeals has ruled that inducing or causing means provided an opportunity and prevailed upon the youth to engage in the behavior. What, in my experience, we've seen in these types of cases is we have these youth that are sexualized, involved in the business, and travel from pimp to pimp. What we end up with pimp 2, 3, 4 through 10, we end up with a youth that is used to this behavior, engaging in this behavior, quote-unquote, willingly, in the sense that that's how they know how to survive. That's how they know how to make money. And we have the pimps then at that position say, yes, I took photographs of her to post on the Internet. Yes, she used my laptop to place the ads. Yes, I provided security for her during her prostitution details. And yes, I took some of the money. But I didn't provide the opportunity and prevail upon her to do it. That this was self-actualized or self-facilitated behavior. And what we're looking to do is broaden the application of the compelling statutes to those that facilitate, that provide an act that aids a juvenile to engage in prostitution, rather than just those that cause or induce. And to the extent that that amendment gets added into this bill, I'm also in support of that.
Thank you. Questions? Senator Wessett first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As I understand it, the question was asked earlier, this applies to pimps but not to johns. And where do you draw the line? I mean, on the one hand, a pimp is compelling prostitution for sale, but however, a john might compel a underage girl to have sex with him and do that repeatedly, and yet he wouldn't necessarily be determined to be a pimp. Would you kind of flesh that out for us?
Absolutely. Actually, the Court of Appeals, there's a Court of Appeals decision, I believe, in December of this year, Vargas Soto, I believe is the name, which held that johns were not chargeable under this, that the legislative history under the compelling statute was consistent with those that traffic rather than those that purchase sex. It was a third party who was not involved in the actual transaction. There may be good public policy reasons to expand the compelling statute to those that purchase as well, but that's not my intent in supporting this language at this point in time. We're just talking about the traffickers still.
Just to follow up on that, I wasn't thinking so much as that person who purchases the service. I was thinking of the person who knowingly encourages a middle school girl to engage in that activity with them, not for sale, but purposely seduces his child.
To the extent that we're talking about sexual contact between them and another party, we have other statutes on point that deal with that in terms of criminal liability. We have rape in the second degree for those under the age of 14. We have rape in the first degree for those under the age of 12. So we're talking about Johns as purchasers or someone who prevails upon a youth to engage in sexual contact. We have age-specific sexual charges available as opposed to compelling.
Thank you.
Any other questions, comments? Senator Volmici.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question for Carl. Not your typical day at high school today. I wondered, thank you for coming. I really like when students get involved in the process, and I wondered, was there something that you read or heard about that got you interested in this issue?
The answer to your question, Senator Bonamici, is that how you pronounce it? Okay. Our English class, Miss Patty Sloan, she's my English teacher, and for the last couple months we've been doing an ongoing project studying domestic slavery and sex slavery throughout the world, as well as the United States of America. And so I was part of a group that was assigned to do a report on domestic slavery within our own country. And she approached me and my friend Isaac Lee, who you'll hear from later, about doing a presentation for you guys and arguing for these Senate bills, which as a class, the majority of us, I believe all of us, support the passing of these bills. But yes, for the last 4 years, she's been doing similar projects of this kind, especially with the after-school program, Students for Change, which I'm not sure if you're aware of or not, but they do a lot of things which do work for helping people in these situations and just raising awareness of slavery throughout the world.
Terrific. Thank you. You did a great job here today.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Mr. Moore, I have a question for you. The current statute reads, if this person commits a crime of compelling prostitution to the person knowingly, and then the dash two amendments would add aids or facilitates the commission of prostitution by a person under 18 years of age. Would that also include Craigslist? Or a similar publication? At what point would they have to know? What would they have to know and when?
Well, they'd have to knowingly support an act of prostitution, facilitate an act of prostitution. And so I guess that's a good point. I don't have a... I guess it would depend on the nature of the ad, and it would depend on their specific knowledge as to what was to occur. That's a fair question.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, it is. So internet stuff is wrapped up in this as well?
Could be.
Yeah. Chairman of the committee, Senator Cruz, I guess it would, as Mr. Mullen has indicated, it may depend on the ad.
Okay, I hadn't thought about that angle. I was just thinking of the normal 20th century stuff, so...
Well, I mean, the issue there, I mean, potentially, did that actor actually help, does he advertise this service for this person, mm-hmm. and what type of process was it? I mean, it'd be interesting, I mean, as a fact scenario, as to what was done, and I think it's going to be on a case-by-case basis as to what that individual actually did for that person, and knowing what that might be used for. I mean, if you take a photograph, that's one thing. The question is, did you know the photograph, or did you help, as I think one of the examples, put it onto the system and use that system? I think Greg covered that one example.
There always has to be a specific intent to aid criminal conduct in order for to have criminal liability. So if you have somebody who took a picture in a bathing suit of a 16-year-old girl, and then gave her a camera back, and that went on an internet website posting somewhere without knowledge of the person who was taking the picture that it was for the purpose of prostitution, that person is not chargeable. So there always has to be intent on the person who's going to be charged to aid in that act of prostitution.
So, Mr. Chair, so if all those things happened and this person, the 16-year-old, had decided she wanted a website, So she puts all this stuff together and takes it to somebody who develops her website. Are they culpable at that point?
If they know the website is going to be used for the purpose of prostitution, they are culpable.
Okay. Can we get into interstate jurisdictional issues with this at all?
Or? No.
Okay.
All right. The only other thing I had, first, Carl, thank you very much. We got word that you and Isaac were going to be here. I think it's very important. You should get extra credit for coming up here today. I'd say we'd give you a note, but you got the TV, so everyone can see that you are actually here. Greg, the only thing I wanted to run past you is the potential defense. If someone is charged with this and they are able to produce or show that they received a valid, what appeared to be a valid ID that showed that this person was over the age of 18, what turned out to be a fake ID. How do you think that would play out under the statute?
You know, philosophically, I believe the burden should be borne by the trafficker. Whether you've got fake ID or an ID that looks like the person that they're trafficking, they're still engaging in illegal behavior in terms of compelling, inducing, right, or facilitating an act of prostitution. If it ends up being bad, so be it. We impose that liability for those that sell alcohol to minors. While I understand compelling is different than furnishing alcohol to a minor, that you're still engaging in a criminal act.
So someone is would be in the sense of an affirmative defense that they may be able to raise, or do you think that the statute would be written in such a way or interpreted?
I prefer that it's strict liability with regards to knowledge as to age, because okay, what we have to do is facilitating prostitution.
And the reason I want to go through this, I want to set the record so everyone knows what the intent is as we move this bill forward. So
yes,
thank you very much for your time.
Just to flesh that out just a little bit, Mr. Chair, I believe you said that the perpetrator must have specific intent to aid criminal conduct.
That's the act of prostitution itself.
Yeah. So, if you actually believe that the identification that had been provided to you was valid, then the intent would not be there.
But you still have the intent to facilitate an act of prostitution, which is illegal.
But not a child prostitution. Different deal.
Correct.
So I just wanted to kind of get that on the record that there is a quantum change here in the law.
Yes, there is.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, gentlemen, for coming forward. Was there anyone else who wanted to testify on 425? Not seeing anyone coming forward. We're going to close that public hearing. We're now going to open up a public hearing on 426. And what we're going to do is call up another panel. Isaac Lee, please come forward. Lynn Haxton and Stacy Ayers. And what I'm going to ask you all to do, if you have written testimony, please summarize your testimony instead of reading it word for word. We will give Isaac a little leeway if he wants to read his. If he has written testimony, I will allow that to occur. And Isaac, once you get us started, not sure if you got to get back to class, but I'm going to be the one that holds you up.
Chair Brzezinski, members of the committee, my name is Isaac Lee, and I am a student from West Salem High School, which is located at 1776 Dine Drive Northwest. And it is an honor to be speaking to you guys. I support Senate Bill 426 because I feel it is necessary that we approach and increase involvement to the issue of underage sex trafficking. Senate Bill 426 should be passed because of the long-term effect, as it would assuage the probability of ending human trafficking, as well as create a more well-informed society. Establishing treatment programs for victims are essential. The mental instability of a trafficked child is daunting, as they experience events that no human being should ever experience. We need to help the victims and help reclaim their sense of freedom. Increasing funding and or establishing programs informing about and or ending human trafficking would help boost awareness throughout society, and thus making the trafficking industry lose ground, as traffickers utilize this ignorance towards this issue to their advantage. Increasing the punishments of traffickers and consumers would decrease the incidence of prostitution. Knowing about the enhanced consequences, as well as the increase in probability of them being caught, would discourage them from engaging to such activities. To stray away from this issue would only harbor negative effects, as if we don't expedite a solution towards this issue, then it will continue on expanding. I feel that it is not only critical for the general public to fight for the abolishment of human trafficking, but it's equally as critical for legislation involvement. Thank you for the opportunity to testify before you. I'll be happy to answer any questions. It's truly an honor.
All right. Thank you. Stay tight, and we're going to go with Lynn.
Next one, please.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair Brzezanski and members of the committee. My name is Lynn Haxton. I'm a staff attorney with Youth Rights and Justice, formerly the Juvenile Rights Project. We have, represented over 50,000 children in foster care and juvenile justice system since 1975. I am a staff attorney there. I am involved actively in the commercial sexual exploitation committees in Multnomah County. Youth Rights and Justice fully supports Senate Bill 426. We believe this is a much sounder approach to this issue than the use of detention. We are at a critical juncture in the efforts to provide services for children who have experienced commercial sexual exploitation.
Lynn, I'm going to ask you to summarize instead of just reading verbatim,
okay.
Please.
Currently, the Sexual Assault Resource Center has 169 open cases of children who have been sexually exploited in the Multnomah, Washington County area. But we have no place for these children. Portland has provided short-term shelter beds for these children, but we have no long-term options. Because of the trauma that these children experience through their sexual exploitation and from previous trauma that they've experienced in growing up, sex abuse and physical abuse is very common for these children. They have complex mental health needs. Because of this, and due to also the repeated trauma of their daily rape and violence, they need long-term services, very specialized services, and we urge the committee to put forward Senate Bill 426. Thank you. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Great. Thank you. Stacey.
Chair Brzezanski, Vice Chair Cruz, members of the committee. My name is Stacey Ayers. I'm the Child Protective Services Program Manager in the Office of Safety and Permanency for Children, and that's in the Children, Adults, and Families in the Department of Human Services. I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to testify today. I'd like to let you all know that we are supportive of this concept that is provided in this bill. However, there is a fiscal, and the department is not that. Fiscal is not included in the governor's balanced budget, so we're unable to support the fiscal. Let's start by saying that. The department so far has been involved in a number of different work groups that have been mentioned today. Clearly, the children that are subject to sexual exploitation have a myriad of issues that are really unique to the things that they go through and to their population. One of the things that we know is that Multnomah County has really taken the lead on this, and much of that, the lead that they've taken, the resources that they've been putting forward, and the treatment provisions that they've established have been through their own funding sources. We know that that is going to be an issue that we will have to deal with, but we think that this is a statewide issue. We know that these children are, this is happening across the state. There's no doubt in our minds about that. And as has been testified, there are approximately 170 children who we know have been victims of this type of exploitation. I wanted to mention, I'm not sure that it is currently on this bill, but there was an amendment put forward to add the Oregon Health Authority to this bill. The reason for that is that we're going to be working closely with the Addictions and Mental Health and developing treatment services for these children. So that's, I think, an important issue that we need to be aware of before we move forward. Clearly, the treatment that we believe is necessary for these children is does a couple of things. One, it breaks the link between the perpetrator or the perpetrator and the parent and the child, and that's really critical, I think, in everything that we're seeing and around the nation. The evidence supports that is a critical piece of the treatment of these children, and it's really important in starting the road for these children to recovery. As was discussed a moment ago, it's not only the fact that the children are being raped, but it's also the control issues. It's the drug and alcohol that is used to coerce these children. There's just a myriad of different issues that are involved in the treatment of these children, and the fact that they're being victimized. You guys all have, the committee has my written testimony. I'm going to go ahead and stop at this point. If you have questions for me, I'm happy to answer them.
All right, we're going to go ahead and do that. But first, one thing I want to put on the record, and this is just for clarification for those who may not understand what Stacy's saying. First of all, what I'm hearing is DHS is supportive of the concept and all the work that's gone forward. But because the governor's budget does not have this in consideration being part of that budget, you cannot officially support the fiscal impact on that. But of course, if we as the legislature choose to move forward, prioritize that, and if our colleagues in Ways and Means choose to move it forward, then it will move forward, and then the governor will have to determine whether or not it will fit within the bigger picture of what he needs to do. Is that a fair statement?
Chair Brzezinski, members of the committee, that is correct.
I just want to make certain people don't think that you're standing in opposition because of the fiscal. It's just, at this point, you can't officially take a position in support.
That's correct.
All right. Senator Cruz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple things, Mr. Chair. Kind of let me back up a little bit of what you said. I mean, because this would have subsequent referral, there's no question. What I'm hoping, and in conversations with some of our Ways and Means colleagues, is policy committees have a tendency to pass all sorts of wonderful things and send them to the Ways and Means, and we feel real good about it, and there's no hope of any money being there in the short term. And I would hope that we would be slightly more deliberative, and I'm not saying this is not a good idea, but in this economic environment, it may be virtually impossible to get there, and I would prefer to pass things down to Ways and Means when there's a reasonable expectation action can be taken. And then one other point I wanted to make, you said you were working on Amendment 2, include OHA. Let me suggest that there are those in this body who think that maybe addiction services still belong with adult and family services because of the linkages. So not all those issues have been resolved yet.
Quick question. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to find out if Ms. Haxton and Mr. Ayers, you're also going to testify about the other bill that deals with detention. I believe it's 429.
I am, Your Honor. I mean, excuse me, Senator. I'm used to being in court.
Zansky, Senator Bonamici, members of the committee. No, we don't plan to. The department doesn't plan to provide testimony regarding that particular bill.
Then I'll take this opportunity, if I may, Mr. Chair, to ask you, Mr. Ayers, if you have an opinion or any information about that approach compared with the approach in 426. I still haven't figured out if they're supposed to work together or if they're alternative approaches.
I think that they're, Chair Brzezinski, Senator Bonamici, members of the committee, I think that there are a number of different approaches, and some of them are contradictory to each other. It's a struggle for us. We're all trying to kind of figure this out at the department. We're trying to figure out what the best mechanism to provide treatment for these children. We certainly don't want to. I think that is a law enforcement approach. I certainly don't want to take away from law enforcement tools that they may need to protect children, which I believe is the intent of that particular piece of legislation as well. So I'm not feeling comfortable saying that we wouldn't support it, or we don't think it's the best approach. I mean, clearly, if there's a way to do this without putting kids in detention and potentially re-victimize them, then we would like to do that. We think that that's the best way to do it, provide treatment, et cetera. But again, I'm not feeling comfortable saying, you know, from a law enforcement perspective, that we would not want to allow them to have that tool available to them.
Thank you. And if I may, Mr. Chair, brief follow-up. Perhaps this is for the next, or the bill that's coming up, Senate Bill 429, I think what I know I'm looking for, and hopefully the committee's looking for, what's the best, most effective approach. And that's why we're looking to people who have the expertise in dealing with, obviously, these, as you've testified, very troubled youth. And we want to find the approach that is the most effective to help them. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other comments on this one? Thank you very much, Isaac. Thank you, as is Carl, for taking part. It's very important for all of us when we see young people come forward and be part of the process. It really makes a difference, and it shows that we have young people such as yourself that do take interest and will be sitting here and someday doing the work of the people of Oregon. So thank you for being here today.
It was truly an honor to be here.
You bet. All right, thank you very much. I have one other person, Roger Martin. And Roger, what I'm going to ask you to do, since you're an old-time specialist here, if you can come forward and give us your testimony, but if you can keep it brief. While he's coming up, let me let you know we have three other bills. I want to make certain we have everyone give testimony today. So if you can be more concise and not read your testimony, that would be appreciative. Roger?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Roger Martin. I represent the Oregon Catholic Conference. We solidly support the concepts that you're working on. We recognize the detailed problems you're bringing out. We've accomplished nothing else today. Those two students from West Salem High School illustrate what can be done that's positive. And Ms. Sloan and their class, and I met with them with Senator Jackie Winters, are very versed in what's going on. They're probably the only high school class in the state of Oregon that it is, and I encourage them to try to exchange this information with others, because we personally, my wife and I, had an experience with a senior in high school a number of years ago who was very slickly solicited by a pimp. She didn't know what was going on. These people are very clever, and the more that young people know about it and realize, the better off we're going to be. There are two things I'd like to talk about. We have an expert at Oregon Catholic Charities who works with a lot of disadvantaged people and is an expert in this area. Unfortunately, he's working on a federal grant, which prohibits him from coming down here and testifying. I would be happy to have somebody in the committee get in touch with him for information. There's one aspect you should be aware of. The surveys that Bill Taylor shared with me that you've done with the DAs and the sheriffs around the state do not indicate much in the way of foreign nationals involved. That's contrary to the experience of Oregon Catholic Charities. We are finding, and the man that does this can tell you, that they're hidden deep in the society. People come to this country, often foreign, even counselors come and bring people from their country who are virtually slaves in there, violate all the working laws of the state of Oregon, and are often subject to sexual abuse. They have no idea who to report to, who to complain to. So it's no wonder that the DAs and sheriffs don't hear about it. They don't know how to make a complaint. It does exist. Foreign nationals are coming in, sometimes brought by people that run restaurants to work, ostensibly as child labor, but they're quite often subject to abuse, and that's an area that we should further investigate. One other thing that I should point out to you, and Bill shared this with me, and the representative from the House who was here earlier urged me to tell you that if you talk about confiscating a John's car, you have a problem. It's called the bank interest in it. If the car is mainly owned by a bank, you're going to have a problem getting any value out of the confiscation. That's something you I won't take up any more time. We want to continue to work with your committee and with the House when these bills get over there. We encourage you to continue that. And again, I think those high school kids deserve a huge amount of credit.
You bet. Thank you for coming forward. I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing on 426, open the public hearing on Senate Bill 427. I have two people that are on the list. Greg Mott, why don't you come back up, and Barbara Ross. Again, if you can keep your testimony short and concise, and you are?
Come on up.
And while they're getting situated, was there anyone else who's going to want to testify on 427? All right. Barbara, why don't you start off?
Yes, I'm, again, for the record, I'm Barbara Ross, Chair Prevansky and members of the committee. I'm happy to be here, and I'll just say briefly that I support the concept of this bill. I think that we have to use carrots and sticks to change behavior, and I think the publicity issue helps the public to realize what an important thing this is, but to have more severe fines for customers, I think, is an essential part of changing behavior. And it's very easy for Johns to rationalize that this is an innocent crime, it's something everybody does, and it's not going to hurt anyone. And that is a rationalization because the damage is severe, and I think it's important that we have sizable fines for these crimes. Thank you very much.
I'm sorry, I didn't get your name, so if you'll be...
Chair Brzezinski, members of the committee, my name is Shoshone Thomas-Sweet. I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Center for Christian Values. We're one of a number of advocacy organizations who've been working with professionals and service organizations to mobilize support and awareness around this issue. Thank you for being willing to hear me this morning. Just briefly, I'd like to touch on the subject of the... value of this fine in relationship to the crime that's being done. At first light, this may seem like an exorbitant or unjust or draconian fine. $20,000 sounds like an enormous amount of money. But I think that we need to realize is that there is significant and lasting damage to the victims of human trafficking and to the young boys and girls who are into prostitution. Frequently, the damage from that activity will carry through the person's life. They will be subject to mental health problems. There are a higher likelihood of alcohol and drug abuse. If they need counseling, they can be in counseling for years at a significant cost. And frequently, a young woman who is forced into prostitution will then encounter other aspects of criminal justice or the public health or Department of Human Services system, all of which exact significant costs on society and damage economically that woman's future for the rest of her life. There's a basic tenet of justice, which we support, which is that the punishment should fit the crime. And in this instance, the significant lasting harm to the victims who are sold for sex on our city streets mean that we should have a significant fine in commensurate with the damage that's being done. Thank you for your time.
All right, and we'll let the prosecutor have closing argument again.
Thank you very much, Chair Prezansky, members of the committee. Very briefly, I'm here on behalf of Greg Mowad, on behalf of Multnomah County District Attorney's Office and ODAA, to testify in support of this bill. One of the things the criminal justice system sometimes struggles with is stomping out a problem. And oftentimes we're very good at stomping out the problem with regards to those that engage in the trafficking behavior. We're oftentimes not very good at stomping out the problem with those on the demand side. And this bill is one of the first good efforts that I've seen with regards to addressing the demand issue. As long as demand is a problem in our community, child prostitution is going to be a problem in our community. We can argue about whether $20,000 is the right amount, whether they should be posted on the internet at time of conviction, or if they fail to pay the fine, and there can be certainly differences of opinion with regards to those things. But the way that this bill is written, I think, is a good bill in the sense that it does allow the judge to make a constitutional analysis on an as-applied basis with regards to the fine, looking at the person's ability to pay, and at least as I understood the bill to be written, only imposed publication upon a failure to pay a fine that the judge has already found that the person could afford to pay. The one commonality between those that are charged with purchasing sex in our community with those that are driving under the influence is they tend to come from varied backgrounds. They tend to come touch communities that are not otherwise typically criminally inclined in the sense of being involved in poverty or lack of education, those sorts of things. I think that there will be a high number of purchasers who are going to come from a financial background and an educational background that will be able to address the needs set in this bill. And importantly, I think in this there's a very large piece of public sort of notification that as a community we're not going to accept this.
All right, thank you. Any questions?
Are we talking about the 1-1s at this point or the one bill?
Well, we're talking about 427, and if someone has, I mean, we already had reference that some people have talked about some of the amendments that may be coming forward. I don't know if Greg is was familiar with the dash ones. I haven't even had a chance.
I have not seen the dash ones.
Okay.
So,
okay.
But we'll go through this. Greg, let me ask one other question. We've seen in other areas of criminal law where we've had enhanced penalties. Do you think this may be an area that we might want to consider having a fine for the first offender first-time offender and then elevating it greater for the second?
I think that's a fair way to consider approaching it. The one thing that we have found with regards to these offenders is they change their patterns and practice with regards to purchasing. We may not stomp out the problem in terms of an arrest and a conviction, barring there being something significant for that first bite. What they do, rather than purchasing on the avenue, subjecting them to an undercover arrest, is they'll solicit them through the internet, through chat lines, things like that, that the law enforcement clearly cannot focus on as a lack of a as a result of a lack of resources. And so we tend to catch them the first time. We may not catch them on future occasions, which would be a reason to not to support that type of legislation.
Okay, thank you. All right, thank you very much. Is there any other questions or comments for anyone on the panel? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Go ahead and close the public hearing on Senate Bill 427. We're now going to open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 429. And let's see, I have Tom Clary, Lynn Paxton, and Roger Martin. The three of you will come up. And, Council, I have not even given you an opportunity to kind of put on the record what these are doing. So while they're getting situated, do you want to say what 429 is?
So, Chair, members of the committee, sure. Senate Bill 429 comes to you from the Senate Judiciary Committee. It was a product of a work group over the interim session, as were the other bills. Allows the detention of a juvenile for up to 3 judicial days, and judicial days excludes weekends and holidays for the time the youth is first detained if the youth is alleged to have committed an act that would constitute prostitution if the juvenile were an adult, and there's reason to believe the person would be likely to reoffend if immediately released.
All right, thank you. So I'm going to let you have your choice as to who wants to go forward on first on this one. So,
thank you. Chair Brzezinski, members of the committee, for the record, I am Lynn Haxton, staff attorney with Youth Rights and Justice, formerly the Juvenile Rights Project. We are here today to express serious concerns about Senate Bill 429. The use of detention for victims of commercial sexual exploitation is... These children need treatment, they need help, they need support, but they don't need to be held in detention. Detention is actually harmful for kids. Studies show that it increases their rate of recidivism. They're more likely to penetrate the juvenile justice system further rather than, you know, be exiting it. So we're very concerned about using detention as a placement for children who are victims of sex abuse. One of the points I wanted to highlight was based on Senator Bonamici's question about what's the best thing to do. Currently, we have a victim services work group in Multnomah County that brought together a large number of professionals, and we spent 3 months, many, many hours working on this issue, trying to determine what was the best treatment, what was the best program, and put forth a written document in order to problem. Currently, there are new shelter beds in Portland, and they are accessed to the Juvenile Reception Center. There are there's a number of them, 4 to 8 approximately. A child can access these shelter beds through the reception center without the use of detention or criminal charges, and that's really important. They can go there on their own. They can be brought there by law enforcement. They can be brought there by an advocate. And they can access those shelter beds, which are about 2 to 3 weeks long. At that point, law enforcement and the reception center, the staff there who've been specially trained for this population, can contact the Sexual Assault Resource Center, and they've all been trained to do this, who will respond within 30 minutes on a 24/7 basis to these children. And then we also have LifeWorks Northwest, which is a mental health organization who will do quick mental health assessments and provide services, including intensive wraparound services for these children while they're in the shelter immediately. In addition, we have collaboration going on with child welfare, substance abuse treatment, mental health, residential treatment places in order to provide higher level of care if these children need it. So I propose that we follow the recommendations of this committee that spent a lot of time working on what is the best placement. Following, of course, we need to do more, and we need a longer-term option than this 2 to 3 weeks.
And at this point, we're using other resources, for instance, a residential treatment, psychiatric placements, subacute placements for these children. And we need something that's specially designed for them. That's why we're in support of Senate Bill 426. And so at this point, I would urge you to not support this bill. We think 429 is detrimental to helping these kids. It will drive them further from the services they need. Thank you.
Ms. Cleary. Thank you, Chair Przanski, members of the committee. My name is Tom Cleary. I'm a senior deputy district attorney in Multnomah County. I manage the juvenile division. I have the pleasure of testifying before you today on behalf of our office as well as the Oregon District Attorneys Association. I am here in support of Senate Bill 429. I want to share with you briefly the frustrations that law enforcement are experiencing as they encounter these youth who are engaging in prostitution. And the frustration is that under the current system, they are unable to stop or, quite frankly, even slow down these youth from engaging in this particularly detrimental behavior. A police officer who comes in contact with the youth in this context has literally three options. First option is to return the youth home. And unfortunately, for a variety of reasons that I won't go into this morning, that is not an option. The second option is to transport the youth to the reception center. This is an option available in Multnomah County. The reception center does good work, but it is not a secure place. And so, as has already been alluded to in previous testimony, the youth comes in the front door and goes out the back. The third option is to place the youth into a DHS, Department of Human Services, placement where we see the same behavior. It's not a custodial setting. They come in the front door, they go out the back door. We know from talking to these youth who are experiencing these difficulties, their pimp tells them, don't worry if you get arrested because nothing will happen to you. So the system supports what the pimp is telling them and increases the independent or the dependence that the youth has on this pimp because what he's telling her turns out to be right. This bill will do a number of things. The first thing is it will provide an opportunity to place this youth in a warm, safe place, supervised by people who care about them. The second piece is it will deprive the pimp of the revenue, and we've heard up to $1,000 a day, that this individual would be generating. And third, and most importantly, it will provide for a meaningful opportunity to interrupt the behavior and give our counseling and advocate community the opportunity to interact with this youth, begin to restore some of the difficulties that they've been experiencing and get them on the road to leaving this dangerous lifestyle. In response to the issue that's been brought up by Senator Bonamici, I appreciate that question, and I would articulate for you that we have a saying in juvenile court, the right kid in the right place. There are certainly individuals involved in this activity that can be served via the dependency system. And you'll notice in Senate Bill 429, there is discretionary language so that decisions can be made, that channels or decision points can be constructed that channels that youth to the appropriate service. The unfortunate reality is that there are a number of kids who cannot be treated in that milieu. They are too disruptive. Their behaviors are such that they cannot be maintained there. This bill recognizes that. We are not willing to throw those kids away. We want to continue to work with them so that we can give them the services they need. Thank you very much. Thank you, Tom. Questions, comments? Senator Wissett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Let's take an example. Let's say that a child was taken into custody on the Friday before Memorial Day, and the first 3 days of their detention would not count because those are not judicial days. And if the court was closed due to a furlough, that would be a fourth day that didn't count, and then three more, you would have actually be detaining this person for 7 days before they had an opportunity for a hearing. Would there be constitutional issues with that?
Chair Przanski, I would anticipate that youth that were brought to detention
would go through the same probable cause finding as a youth who was brought in on anything else. So there would be a judicial review of the police reports and associated affidavits for a judge prior to the end of that holiday. That's the way our system in Multnomah County works now.
Any other questions? Senator Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to ask Ms. Haxton, you said that there was a group that got together to discuss the best approach. Would you mind telling us, please, who participated in that?
Well, it was a very large group between
Not individual names, but what interest groups?
Right. It was run by or brought together by the Sexual Assault Resource Center, was led by Aaron Ellis, the executive director, and Janice Merrill of Janice Youth. Janet Merrill of Janice Youth. And they brought together community partners from mental health, law enforcement, child welfare, defense. I was represented there, and you know, anybody that had anything to do with these children, particularly the providers like LifeWorks, people that are working on the ground with these kids.
Thank you. All right. Only comment I want to, Lynn, this is really to your testimony, and my concern is, I guess, more on the statewide basis as to the limitations of resources. Under the proposal that you have, it seems like it would work or potentially could work in Multnomah County or in the Tri-County area. I would think that similar Eugene or Salem might be able to do that, but there are a number of places in the state that do not have those type of resources available. What would your thoughts, I mean, what are your thoughts as concerning areas that do not have that type of advocacy or resources available to follow a similar model that you proposed that would be in Multnomah County?
Well, I think there are two things to look at when you consider that. One is the percentage of victims that we find in Multnomah County. It's huge. Out of the 169 cases opened by at the Sexual Assault Resource Center, 90% are in Multnomah County. The other issue that I think is relevant is that Multnomah County has some specific specialized treatment facilities that other parts of the state don't have, but they are accessible for those children. For instance, the residential drug and alcohol treatment for juveniles is the only one in the state, as DePaul in Multnomah County. But youth or also RAD, the one in detention, is also available. But so youth can come from anywhere in the state and access those services, and I would propose that we have a system that allows youth to be referred from anywhere in the state.
Okay, I appreciate that, but at the same time, what I'm understanding, we're talking about a median intervention. Would you be advocating or comfortable with someone from Klamath Falls being moved from Klamath Falls to Multnomah County for this like 3-day or 4-day period?
Are you talking about for the detention?
Yes.
No, but I oppose the use of detention for victims on any level.
I understand.
And, but if they were to come to the shelter at the reception center or any long-term shelter, I would propose that we have it open to any child who needs it in the state.
All right. Thank you very much. Senator Wissett.
Thank you. I would like to return to my first line of questioning for a minute. Because we go, if you're looking at this act, it shows that ORS 419C.136 provides for the authority to detain a youth for 36 hours without judicial review. And the new sub 2 would for this specific purpose, would allow for 3 judicial days, which would make my scenario of 7 days without judicial review would appear to make that germane. So I would be concerned, again, that the way this thing is worded with judicial review, and you add days to it, it could become not only going from 36 hours to 3 days, but actually to a great deal longer than that.
I want to let Tom respond to this, but I'm going to kind of lay the framework. In the adult system, there's a need for a probable cause hearing, and for this type of holding or arrest, they actually call a judge and they talk to the judge and kind of with the affidavit as to what they have. Then the judge makes a decision kind of on the scene as to that situation before they're actually able to be detained. But I'm not sure in the juvenile system, I'm assuming that's the same type of model that's used.
Chair Przanski, Senator Whitsitt, Senator Przanski, I couldn't articulate it any better. You're exactly right. And to simplify things, what we do is the adult system has probable cause hearings, as you've articulated. We simply take the paperwork from juvenile and put it on the pile for the adult process to take care of. It's a meeting between the judge, as you said, the deputy district attorney that's assigned a duty over that holiday weekend, Senator, in your example, and there's a police representative there. So we go through the same process.
Thank you. Right. Thank you very much. I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 429 and open our last public hearing for Senate Bill 430. Council, why don't you give us a quick review? And Elizabeth Kushwaugh is the only person I have scheduled for here. So, Elizabeth, if you'll come on up.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 430 makes crimes of involuntary servitude, trafficking in persons, and compelling prostitution subject to civil forfeiture. The bill is not limited to just violation of those crimes, but includes solicitation, attempt, or conspiracy to violate those crimes.
Elizabeth?
Members of the committee, my name is Elizabeth Kushwaugh, representing the Oregon District Attorneys Association. The DAs are in support of Senate Bill 430. We had heard there could have been possible amendments to them, to the bill. We are not in favor of any proposed amendments, but we are fine with adding a human trafficking portion to this bill.
Thank you. Any questions at this point? All right. Well, this is a public hearing. We had only one person signed up, and I know we're getting close to the end, so we'll have more. But basically, Elizabeth, why don't you just tell us as to how this sanction would work for the forfeiture of the vehicle?
I guess it's not just vehicle, it could be just civil forfeiture in general.
It would apply the way it does to all of the other portions of that.
All right. So it's basically what we're adding is a new area that could be subject to civil forfeiture. All right. Any questions? Any comments? Thank you very much. I want to thank everyone who was here today. I know we had a lot of territory to cover. We covered six or seven bills and a lot of people. So, and those, I think the students have left, but I want to thank all of those who are here. And we will be looking at these bills as to moving them forward through work sessions once we get the other information back that we need. And we'll take it on a bill-by-bill basis. Anything else? Thank you very much, and we're adjourned until tomorrow morning at 8:30.